Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today. And also brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
Before, it was just like I would call or chat with my staff in Facebook chat and went, you know, like very like bootstrapped, right? So now, not anymore. I really make use of technology. I have different project management apps. Again, it's because I want to sleep at night.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Share Podcast. We finally got this girl. It's a very, very unique way I got to know her. And I'll tell you about it later on how I got to know her. But she is one of the best global Pinay founders that you should hear about. I mean, she's pretty popular in the U.S. I got to meet her in the U.S. in the latest PodFest that I went to in Orlando. But y'all will know about her now because she is the founder and CEO of the MGS Global Group, Ms. Aya Schlacker. Aya, maayong. What's happening again?
Maayong hapon.
Hapon. There you go. How's it going? And of course, she's Cebuana.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me in the podcast. Maayong hapon kaninyong tanan for the Bisaya speaking people who listen to Hustle Share. I'm so honored to be on this podcast. I actually found out about you 2 years ago through David Allen Moss. We were introduced, I think, 2 years ago, and we were talking an email. Yeah, so I was very intrigued by you, Ron. And then I finally met you in PodFest, and I'm so glad we met. We hit it off right away. We even did karaoke, but you didn't see me sing. You left before I sang.
The jet lag was really strong.
I needed to sleep.
Right, I needed to sleep. But again, super duper. Super duper happy we finally get to do this. And I've heard about you from David Alan Moss. So David Alan Moss, for those people who are not in the podcasting, like, who the hell is David Alan Moss? Right. So David Alan Moss is one of the biggest podcast network founders. He has a big podcast network called Evergreen Podcast in Cleveland, Ohio. And she always flexes me. I have this Filipino friend you should know about in Cleveland, Ohio, which is not a, it's not the go-to Filipino community in the States, right? You're talking the Bay Area, a bit Midwest, some of them in Texas, some of them in the East Coast, but Cleveland in the heart of Ohio, not too many Filipinos out there, but that's what we will be talking about later. Because again, through and through, you are an amazing Filipina Cebuana hustler. But I need to ask you the $1 million question. Aya, what's your hustle?
So I was trained as an architect and was really going to pursue architecture as a traditional architect. But now my career pivoted to serving architects. So now we're an architecture outsourcing company. So most of our clients are architects, interior designers, and people in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. They hire us to do all their construction documentation and, you know, yeah, we're basically an outsourcing company in the architecture space. And yeah, I didn't expect that this was going to happen. But
we, of course, things happen for a reason. And you guys are doing an amazing job. I always say it like, yeah, Pod Machine or podcast BPO thingamajig, outsourcing product that we do. It's like the MGS of podcasting. Yes. There you go. Well, you got nothing about you. And you guys work 24/7 out of Cebu, and you guys had an amazing day. I had a chance to actually see the content that you post. I want to pick your brains. But before we get carried away, I need you to buckle up real quick. We're going to go cross the Mactan Bridge, go to the airport, and we got to go to the hangar, because there I parked the most scientific invention of the 21st century. Because we're going to have to go all the way back to how you started. Before Cleveland Aya was born, there was Cebu Aya. But not on the year 2024. We're going to go all the way back to how this started out. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Oh, ha. Now we're in Larsan. Over Larsan and Puente Circle. There you go. So there, that's what I want to really find out. Okay, before we became an architect, you are a very pretty Filipina beauty. I want to understand.
Oh, my God. You're so sweet.
No, of course. You're Cebuana. So you guys are competitive with this stuff, okay? Let's just call it what it is. There's a lot of the best, the most beautiful Cebuanas. I mean, Filipinos are Cebuanas. But Aya, before we became an architect, Muna, I want to understand your very first exposure to hustling, right? In doing those things. What was that like growing up? And what was it like growing up in Cebu?
Okay, so I'm Provinciana at heart. Like, I really just was born and raised in Cebu City. And, you know, my parents were entrepreneurs, you know, and I didn't even know employees existed, because growing up, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but sold pandesal and ensaymada. She had a home bakery business. And then my dad started a law firm. And so as a child, and I didn't even know that, you know, I thought entrepreneurship was the only way to go. I didn't know people had jobs, but, you know, I was young. So I'm like, what job am I going to do? Like, but I was a creative. So I wanted to do fashion. Maybe I was drawing all the time. So I was making dolls. I was very creative at heart. I wasn't that good at school. Right. So for me, it was really hanging, you know, me and my draft in my notebook and crayons. And that's where I decided that, you know, I really want to be something of a designer of some sort, right? But again, I saw, you know, one of the reasons why I love being an entrepreneur, first of all, is it's a very modest and humbling profession. Yep. Because I know that entrepreneurs, only 1% or 2% of entrepreneurs provide 99% of work for the global economy.
Yep.
So it's very hard to be an entrepreneur. I saw my parents really struggle, you know, as, you know, we were, my mom, again, after we were older, she started her bakery. It was so hard to make money, serve, you know, having three kids and with bread, like, you know, one piece of bread, you make what, 10 centavos or whatever. Sure. So I really saw my parents hustle from, you know, when we were young. But what really did it for me is my mom, this is perfect because it's International Women's Day today, and yep, my mom is really an inspiration. Like she worked as a baker, as a caterer. She even catered for like 2,000 people. Like what? I remember packing bread and shopao in like, you know, it was campaign season and they hired my mom to feed like 2,000 and there were like boxes and I had shopao and moyong and cups of rice. So that's how, you know, we started and I didn't know anything else, but later on, you know, how much catering can you do? The food business is not really that profitable unless you franchise. So she had an opportunity to, I was not in high school, second, maybe third year in high school. She had an opportunity to start a jewelry business. Interesting. We had all this dough from our bakery, like all of the harina, all the flour.
Yeah.
And so she used that to make jewelry and it became pan arts, like pan meaning bread.
Wow, I didn't even know that was possible. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's like hardcore, right? And you know, like it's just always a struggle growing up. My dad was just starting, I think he started Sunstar. He didn't like being a lawyer. So he started the newspaper when we were young. So we were really struggling. Mm-hmm. So my mom was like, you know, making jewelry out of leftover flour. But long story short, my mom's company grew to like 300 employees in like 4 years.
That's hyperscale. Like,
I know. And she was traveling all over the world. She's in Japan. She's in Italy. She's in Paris because she joined all these big expos. And I even met, I don't know if you know Dillard's, it's like a Macy's. I would go with her every, you know, during the summers and help set up the booth. And I met Todd Dillard, the owner of Dillard's. Like,
amazing.
You know, from baking bread to using the leftover flour to make jewelry to becoming like this, one of the top, you know, exporters of costume jewelry. Mm-hmm. That was such an inspiration. She really helped my dad when my dad was starting out his newspaper, you know, his media business. So for me, I also wanted to do that. And I saw the benefits of when you become a successful entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like if you're an employee, it's hard. Like you have a certain amount of income, like 50,000, whatever. But as an entrepreneur, she was able to really send us abroad to go to school. But it was not easy. Like that's why I'm so, the word is tihik or kuripot. Like I really value money because my parents really work hard. Like we know the value. I know the, you know, that my mom would work till 2, 3 a.m. to make sure all the goods are done, things like that. So I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur when I was 6. And love I it. Saw the success that they were able to do after a lot of hard work. But then one thing they said is, Aya, you got to, in entrepreneurship, you got to pay your employees before you. That was rough for us because like I wanted a lot of nice things growing up, but, you know.
Leaders eat last, unfortunately.
One more story. My friends had Levi's jeans and stuff, right? Uh-huh. You know, this was early on. My mom didn't have money. Obviously, we were hustling. She was hustling. You know what she did? She got the sacks of flour, and she dyed it blue.
What?
And then made it Levi's jeans. Uh-huh. She had it made, but when the sun shines, you can see General Mills in the court. and I'm like, this is so embarrassing. Like you're walking and you're looking like Levi's jeans, but then when the sun shines, you can see the shadow or whatever silhouette of General Mills. But yeah,
well, man,
that's why I'm buried.
That is such an amazing story. And again, this is what the clear example of that entrepreneurship is not taught by saying. You teach it by doing. And a lot of the most, I've said this in my fifth anniversary episode, that, you know, a lot of the lucky people that got to experience entrepreneurship very early on in their life, it sticks with you. Whether you actually become an entrepreneur or you don't, it doesn't matter, because those habits that you instill in yourself by seeing your parents or you're seeing your role models do it, it's just it's with you for life. But what I want to understand now, Aya, I mean, you've seen them do it, but aside from, again, them telling you that leaders eat last, you don't get paid right away, what are the other indelible lessons that you learned from them or you've seen them do that you still carry with you to this day now that you're the entrepreneur?
There's dignity in labor, right? So no matter what, sometimes when I had a smaller office, I took the trash out, I mopped the floors, I would get food for my team. It doesn't matter even if I'm the boss, right? Correct. There's dignity in labor, whatever it is that you do, there's no harm. Just a few years ago during COVID, I almost shut down my business because I'm an outsourcing company.
Yeah.
And not many people know this, but I almost shut down because my clients are in hospitality. Like, no one's building hotels. Mm-hmm. I actually asked my family if I can become a sales lady in Tiffany's during Christmas because I can get commission so I can pay my team their 13th month pay. In the Philippines, we're required to have 13th month pay, and I didn't want to do that. My husband has a job. He has a modest job. We can survive. So I asked my kids if I can work in Tiffany for 3 months just during the holiday season as a sales lady in Cleveland, 2020. They're like, well, you do what you have to do. Luckily, I didn't have to do that. But okay, that's the thing I have to do to support the team, because they, you know, without my employees, I'm nothing. They really do the best for my clients. So yeah, that is, there's dignity in labor, and generosity is the key to success, Ron. My dad always says, look at your hand, right? If you're tight-fisted, you will never receive anything. But if you always give, you're open to receiving. My dad says, give till it hurts, right? And I even told my kids, I'm like, guys, it's Christmas. I need to pay my team their 13th month. So maybe we'll minimize the gifts, right? Like, in the States, people are so excessive over there. They have a list, and you buy like 5 gifts. I'm like, we'll have 1 gift each, and that's it. So yeah, that is my, and now I've been super blessed, Ron. Like, right now we've grown so much. We're not 45 employees, and, you know, because again, I think, yeah, right now, and we have a team in Bogota, Colombia. We have a remote team of 5 employees over there. Mm-hmm. And that just happened in the last 2 months. But again, as a leader, you can't be all like, you know, you got to serve me. No, it's the opposite. When you have a team, it's my responsibility to serve my employees and to find a pipeline of clients for them. So there's no room for, what's the word for like humbug or like mayabang? There's no room for vanity or ego.
Right, right.
As an entrepreneur.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Because entrepreneurship is a game of humility. That's why it's so weird when all these people, the real entrepreneurs, the real people that, yeah, like you said, provide jobs. I'll just digress a little bit. I watched a YouTube short the other day of Mark Cuban. And he was asked, do billionaires create jobs? And he's asking, like, no, billionaires do not create jobs. Entrepreneurs create jobs. Not because we want to create jobs, because we need help in getting to where we want to be. And the way you get to do that is you build a tribe that's equally as competent or even better than you to be able to get there. And again, you are right. There's love in labor, and you'll do whatever it takes to serve the people that choose to join you in that journey. And I love it that these are the foundational things that your parents taught you, because, man, now that you've told the world, now we've scaled that up to everyone that's listening to this episode. It's not just you anymore, Aya. We will now carry that along forever. But okay, now you had these foundational skills. Now when it was your turn to hustle, early, young Aya, what were the first few hustles that you did, and what did you learn over those stints?
When I was in college in Columbia University for my master's. Oh, no,
you
college.
Did Columbia.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, how was that like? Was that your first out of the country experience, and you lived alone? What was that like?
No, you will value this. You know, I grew up, you know, by the time I was in college and high school, my parents were, you know, very established now. So they were successful. My dad at that time was secretary of Department of Transportation. My mom already had a big company. And I was in architecture school in USD, actually. We moved from Cebu.
You so went to USD. Are you kidding me? I have promotion.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I love USD. Like, anyway, so I went there.
Subtle
I didn't
proof.
Even know how
to... Subtle yeah. proof right there. The arch of the centuries. Oh yeah. My God.
So I went to USD, but then most of my college friends were all from Cebu, because, you know, Cebuanos, we don't speak Tagalog, and I only speak English, and people made fun of me. Like, I know, but what's this girl? She's so like... Arte, what's the word for Arte? Like, she's too elitist. Like, she doesn't speak. I didn't know how to speak Tagalog, like, when I moved to Manila. But we were partying a lot, Ron. I mean, in college, I was 16. Come on, like, all my friends from Cebu, they all moved to Manila. We were partying, and, like, school was just, was just there. Uh-huh. And I'm like, you know what? I really want to be serious with my studies. I asked my mom if I could go to the States and, like, you know, create my own path, because I didn't like the way you know, it was everything. We come from privilege at this point, right? Yeah. Everything was given. Like there is no hustle anymore. Like, I didn't want to be that spoiled girl who just got everything from my family and not know how, the value of money and independence. So I wanted to go to the US and go to school. And so I did at 19. My mom was like, you know, my tita, my aunt had a place in New Jersey, and I applied to architecture schools there and I got in. So I moved to the US, I think when I was 18 or 19 by myself initially, but my sister, who's a year older, also came with me. So I started in the US, but, you know, in college, I didn't have a lot of money. My mom, you know, we had very minimum allowance. We were earning in pesos, right? So we had, so I, some of my side hustles in college, I became a photographer for a wedding, like fake it till you make it. It's like, yeah, my, one of my friends asked me to take photos of his wedding. I'm like, sure, why not? I did that. I was an assistant makeup artist for my sister that gave me a little money. When I moved to Columbia University, I worked in the library stacking books. Worst job ever because I'm so short, right? It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, God, because you can only, as a foreign student, you can only work in the university. So
yeah.
I was stacking books just to so I can eat, you know, in a nice restaurant, because I was just eating ramen and like egg and chicken, like, you know, like
noodles in Filipino. There you go.
Yeah, I went to the best school, but, you know, again, my allowance is not a lot. So I would save my money, you know, my library money, and then do that. So that's that. Another job was a professional mover. A friend of mine who's super rich wanted me to help move. I was like getting paid like $30 an hour to pack and sort stuff. Like I said, I don't care what it is. I can, you know, organize books or like pack for others, pack all the kitchen stuff. Yeah. So those are the things that I did before.
But what did that teach you about yourself? Because you what I love about this choice, Aya, is that you had the choice to be very, very affluent and literally live like a queen in USD. And by the way, for those people who are in the States or listening to this, I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of y'all that will be listening. The USC stands for University of Santo Tomas. It's the oldest university in Asia. It's 400 years old. I study there. Aya study there. So there's a lot of tradition. It's the only Catholic university in the country. I mean, it's the most Catholic. It's the first one, but they flex that they directly report under the Pope. So that's what they flex about. But
I know it's very religious school for sure.
Super, super.
We have a really nice church there.
Correct. So what, you know, you had that choice, but you opted to go take the hard path. But eventually it will get, I mean, all of these will pay off. And that's the first sign of entrepreneurship already. We entrepreneurs always take the hard path, right? It's not easy, but eventually.
I know, right? I should just marry a rich guy, right?
Straight and only fans, whatever. That's another thing that people do now. But I want to understand those little side hustles. While you were doing those, what were you learning about yourselves? Because again, you had that option. You could be privileged and have luxury, but you opted to choose this route. What were the things you learned about you as you were doing this, hindsight being 2020?
I learned that I could learn from a lot of people, right? No matter what you are, whether you're a photographer, you're the janitor, there's always a learning experience. Like, I'm not, humility for sure. Like, come on, I was like packing kitchen stuff for a rich Manhattanite. Like, they have no idea. I also, you know, come from privilege here, but no one knows. No one knows you in the US, right? You do. Mm-hmm. You're just like one of them. So humility, and I can really, that I have the ability to really suffer. I went to architecture school. We stay up late all night, right? Like, you know, I have a strong tolerance for, I don't know if pain is the word, or I can really like work hard. I didn't know that about myself. I used to be very like, oh, you know, I would ask my housekeepers to do things. But when I moved to the States, I realized, oh, I am hardworking and I can do stuff on my own, right? Like I, you know, did the laundry and cooked and do all the driving. That's for people who don't know the Philippine culture. It's kind of normal to have housekeepers. Even our housekeepers have housekeepers, right? So it's not like unusual to have help. But yeah, I learned about myself that, you know, I'm able to learn from others no matter what, and humility. It was a very humbling experience. you know, no one cares who you are or your family or your father or your mom. Correct. And that, in the beginning, I was like, oh, shit, what am I doing here? Like, in the Philippines, I can just flex my, you know, I had bodyguards before. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, now, so it is a very humbling experience that, you know, in the States, you're by yourself, right? Yeah. No one knows you. So you got to really suck it up and, like, do what everyone else is doing. So that's how, you know, yeah, it's, and also resilience, right? I can't just go home to mom and dad. Like, I gotta figure stuff out on my own in the States. Like, before, I would make collect calls. There was no WhatsApp. Like, I would literally get on the phone, drop some quarters, and call my family. So I think that's what it is, really. Hard work and humility.
It's eerie. I've heard this similar story just a few weeks ago with none other than the chairman of Alaska Milk, Fred Uitengsu. So he had the same choice. He had the privilege here. Of course, if you own Alaska Milk, you can get away with a lot of things here. But he opted to go to the States, stay there for 10 years, actually, until he went back and took over the family business. But it's eerily similar. He wanted to prove to himself and to his family that I can do it. And through meritocracy, that you actually earn your merit in the land of the free and the land of opportunity. And you were able to do that. So after university, how did that lead to architecture now? I mean, you're still an architect there, but how did you then earn your stripes now? I'm looking at your LinkedIn, and this is the only reference I have. So after Columbia, right? You did the first job.
So after Columbia, this is the thing. I really like living in the US already. Mm-hmm. So after undergrad, 2 weeks later, I went to grad school because I didn't want to leave the US. I kind of like being independent. But I had no break, Ron. Like, after 2 weeks of graduating, I went to Columbia grad school.
Okay.
And then I'm so paranoid because I wanted to stay in the country. Even before I graduated from grad school, I was already looking for a job. So I got a job even before I graduated grad school. So I had a week break and started working.
Wow.
So for me, I know people say not so nice things about the US, right? I mean, with everything going on politically, but, you know, the US is really a land of opportunity. If you really work hard, you can really do well for yourself.
Yeah.
So I went to this company, my first job in Greenwich, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And that is when I really learned how to work hard. Like, literally, I lived in Queens because at that time I couldn't afford Manhattan anymore, right? Because Columbia University, I was in the dorms there. I lived in Sunnyside, Queens. And I commuted every day to Greenwich, Connecticut. So I would wake up at 4 a.m., get to work at 8, and do the same thing for... Yeah. So I walked like 1 kilometer to the train, take a train to Grand Central, and then from the train, take another train to Connecticut, and then take a bus to the office. That was like 5 hours a day for 3 years.
That's the hustle right there. But of course, our very first jobs always leave a foundational mark towards us.
Yes.
So now, straight out of college, you're ready for this. You already know how to hustle for a few more years. And this is your daily grind, my goodness. But what did you learn in that first job? Because it's so much easier. And I've seen this in some cases where first job just wasn't a fit. They just like, not for me. Well, you stayed this for and did this for 3 years. What were you learning and what did you enjoy doing there? That even though the grind was hell, you stuck around.
The only reason why I went there is because I didn't have a lot of technical skills and they hired me. I didn't know AutoCAD. Coming from Columbia University, you're taught like conceptual stuff, right? So this company gave me an opportunity to work there. So I did. Plus they gave me, they sponsored my visa. Because it's hard. That's the key. That's why people in the US like immigrant architects, because you're tied to the company for 3 years.
So that's a nice retention strategy.
It's not like I wanted to commute like 5 hours a day, you know? It's like, and that's just the commute part. I still had to work 8 to 10 hours.
Oh,
we're all burnt out, right? So that's, I think, where I get all of my, you know, I'm not afraid of work, actually. So that's that. So one thing I learned, I started from the bottom. When, you know, I was like, at first I was like, I went to Columbia. Why am I drafting? Right? Like in my head, like, why are they giving me all this, like picking up red lines, you know, the stupid stuff. And one of my project managers said, Aya, you need to learn from every single thing that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you learning how to draft is the most crucial part, because architects can draw on a sketch pad, right? But how is that going to work? Do you know how to do construction details? Do you know what's underneath? You know, what are the pipes you need to create the hot water and cold water? Like, what are waterproofing details? Those are the things you need to learn. Making a design on paper, anyone can do that. A six-year-old can do that.
Correct.
But learning what's behind those walls, and that's my first, you know, I realized drafting and doing the things that I'm doing now is really important. It's not fancy, but it's something that needs to get done. It's foundational.
Absolutely. Now, that's such an amazing, amazing start. Now, let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will continue on the next few hustles of Aya until how she decided that it's her turn to become an entrepreneur on her own. We'll talk about that more after the break.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from the break. We are still with Aya Schlechter, that told us how she were able to do it in the Empire State, technically, and we were able to hustle there. But okay, I want to then understand, from being a junior designer in Harrison Architecture and Design, you did a couple more jobs, project architect, couple project architect things. So from these foundational things that you told us about yourself before you, when you were on your first job, what were the next few skills? And I hope it wasn't a 5-hour commute anymore. How did life improve?
It was like 20 minutes. It was the best.
Yay.
So yeah, I moved to, after 3 years, I quit. I realized that my former boss, there was a huge turnover rate. Like, I didn't know that, obviously, but you know, people were quitting left and right and I was stuck there. I'm like, oh my God,
3 years,
I need
baby.
To get out. Anyway, so I worked in a few companies in the city. And then that time, you know, my boyfriend proposed to me. Aww. So, you know, like we got married and, you know, I was still obviously working for different companies, but I already knew I wanted to start my own architecture firm. So when I was pregnant with my daughter, Anna, like I was still working in the building studio, but I knew I was going to quit. We were living a very modest life in Queens. It's not that expensive. We were in Astoria. No. Yeah, we were in Jackson Heights. We moved to Jackson Heights, New York. Very modest, one bedroom. I told my husband, I really want to start my own company. Can we afford for me not to work? He's like, well, you can, I give you allowance of $5 a day. That's like, you know.
How are like you going to survive?
So that's $40 a month. I mean, a week, right? Like in New York City. And I'm like, oh shit, can I do this? But I really wanted to start my own. So the good thing about New York City is if you go to a boxing gym, there are like 100 boxing gyms. You get 1 week for free.
Wow.
Right. So I did the boxing thing for free because there's a 1 week trial. And then the yoga, there are like 20 yoga studios, right? Like I would do that for free trial and move on to the next. So I did a lot of free stuff in Central Park. You know, there was a lot of things that you can do for recreation. And then I cooked a lot and, you know, like I really saved all that money. It wasn't a lot, but when I gave birth to my daughter, I was like, oh, you know what? I can manage with very little money, right? Because I cook and all that. So I decided to take the licensing exams because to become a licensed architect, you need 9 exams.
What?
So
9?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Philippines, I think, how many, in the Philippines, is it correct that it's just one?
In the Philippines, just one exam. But in the US, there's 9. But they're easier. But now it's narrowed down to 6. So, so I was like, you know, as I, when I was taking my exams, I was studying. And then I was taking care of my daughter. It was so hard. But then a lot of my former bosses were giving me drafting work. Like, hey, Aya, are you ready? Can you work for us a little bit here and there? Okay. So I started taking
on work. So the allowance
was,
had other things on top of it because you're already frugal, plus you're making some side hustles at the same time.
Yeah, here and there. So my bosses were like, hey, can you work already? But I already quit. So they just kind of gave me drafting work because I'm really a good drafter. I'm so good at like detailing, the detailing. I'm very technical. I know exactly what goes on behind, you know, the structures, right?
Wow.
It's hard to find women who are extremely technical, but that's why I built the business. So so I started doing gigs here and there. And like, I had this major big break run.
Okay.
A friend of mine worked for Coach, designing stores for Coach.
What?
Architecture.
Coach the bag. The brand.
The bags. Mm. Yeah. So he said, Aya, you know, we need some, we can't handle the work. Can you help us? I'm like, sure. And I did one store. I'm like, this is so easy. Give me more. Give me more. So I kept on doing the work. And then I'm like, you know what? I asked my friends and you know, my architect friends and my former co-workers, do you want to hustle with me nights and weekends? I'll give you work. I'll pay you per project. You know, we'll have fun. I trained them. I had 3 employees while I was breastfeeding my daughter.
Wow.
My husband would come home and I'm like, who are these people? I'm like, yeah, well, this is so-and-so. And like, I'm training them to. So we were able to produce in 6 months, I think 300 Coach stores.
Oh my God.
What? And my friend was like, how did you do that? I'm like, don't worry about how. Here's the work. Like, so that's the beginning. And I'm like, you know what? It's quite profitable because it's the same, you know, you do so many and it's the same. So I was able to like, you know, provide for me, my family, my friends.
Right.
So that's just the beginning of MGS, really, that the drafting company. And I'm like, forget about my exams, you know.
I mean,
I can't study and like work this. I mean, I got a big break early on,
right?
Within 3 or 4 months of being by myself.
Yep.
So yeah, that was the start. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. Just at the end of the day, in any type of business, doesn't matter what business model you're in, service, product, doesn't matter. If you don't have access to deal flow or leads, right? Doesn't matter how good you are, you know, you need people to keep the business afloat, right? And you had access, even if you didn't want to work, people were still throwing you work because your reputation precedes you. Because they won't give that to you anyway if your work didn't speak for itself. That's why it kept coming back. Right? You had that rep and you're able to deliver how many? 500 stores of Coach?
I think 306 months. It was like crazy.
Oh my goodness.
It was really, my daughter was 11 months because my mom had a manufacturing company run. So in my head, I'm like, we'll do time and motion studies. Like I was studying Gantt charts when I was 12, right? Because, you know, that's what I knew. Like we did time and motion studies for the baker so that we know how much each piece of bread would cost.
Right.
So that's how I ran the whole architecture support. If I do this, you know, like we moved back to the Philippines actually 2008. I'm like, okay, Larry, my husband, I said, we should try to move back. I'll build a team back home. You know, our daughter's like 8, 11 months. So we went back to the Philippines to really grow the business, but the recession hit.
Ouch.
So now I have a kid, I have my husband, and I'm living in my parents' basement with no money. It's just like really rough. Anyway, that's that. We moved back to Cebu in 2008, thinking I could scale the business, but ended up with nothing.
Right. At that point, so this is common among entrepreneurs, the rock bottom moment. And this is what makes you or breaks you, because everybody, we're all going to get hit. It doesn't matter who you are. I don't care how you think you're good. There will be a knockout punch. But it's what you do after that matters the most. Because at the end of the day, it really is the end until you just said it's done. But you obviously kept coming back. So last year, that was the year that almost killed us. But we were able to scratch and claw. We were hit with the worst cards, things that you cannot control. My co-founder passed away. Our biggest client churned because they had to pull out. So we had to scratch and claw. Yeah. And I'm lucky I was surrounded by an amazing team and a lot of great investors and even peers that literally chipped in left and right just to help us get there. So I credit all of them. You cannot do it alone. When you're rock bottom, you cannot do it alone. How did you get back out, Aya? And what type of help did you get after that rock bottom?
Well, we had savings. So we lived on our savings.
Nice.
And that really went down so fast. And I felt guilty, you know, that I moved my whole family because my husband had a really good job in the States. Mm. And I thought, you know, I was doing really well working with, the pipeline of shops were like, it was amazing. So, you know, with the outsourcing model, it was savings, but you know, I worked with my brother and I started a photo editing company. So we would edit photos for weddings. And then we started a company that did wedding albums for Koreans. And then we didn't really make a lot of money. And then we were going to do nail kiosks, get nail printers, really to hustle. But then one day, I don't know if I told you, but I own this chocolate company called Tablea Cafe.
What?
I started that. Yeah. So in 2010, we were already out of money and so embarrassed that I'm like, I look good on paper, but I have like literally zero money to even buy groceries. I'm like, because we already used up all of our savings.
Right.
So I started this company called Tablea Chocolate Cafe in 2010, and it grew to like 6 stores in 2 years. It was really, you know, and that was the start. I'm like, yay. And the people wanted to franchise, you know. Mm. You can Google it. It's called Tablea Chocolate Cafe. It's a staple in Cebu. And Yes, there was one in JY Square.
Wow.
And we were in the airport. It's really good. When you come to Cebu,
now
you should try it. And we sell all of our stuff. We sell all of our, you know, a lot of cafes in Manila carry our products. So that was the hustle. But then I still had no architecture work. But interestingly enough, all the people who were working in Coach were laid off, right? Mm. Michael Kors took them because Michael Kors, the client, was expanding.
Right.
So now my former Coach people were hired by Michael Kors. They called me back. And that was the start. Ron, I've done around 4,000 stores for Michael Kors to date.
Oh, my God.
Yes. But you know, like you said, it didn't happen because I'm a nice person.
Right.
Like it happened because my mom and dad taught me how to run a business, how to become profitable, how to treat people with respect, how to take care of your employees. I didn't do all 4,000, but that was the break. Like after 2 years of doing the cafe, my former contacts, you know, a recession normally ends after 2 years, 16 months to 2 years. Mm-hmm. So by that time they started calling me, and then we started to do work for Michael Kors.
Got it.
And that's when, you know, everything, you know, I set up the MGS started really officially.
All right. So a little quick, what does MGS stand for?
Okay, Michelle Garcia Schlachter. Michelle is my,
That's a real name. Okay.
Yeah. It's real. That's my given name, the legal name, MGS. Yeah.
No, but that's amazing, and you're totally right. If you're taught the hard skills of, you know, running a Gantt chart, running a P&L, being frugal, making sure that your COGS or your unit economics are really good, right? And then you couple that with the soft skills, being the ability to not have ego, the ability to network and nurture relationships through time that even when the right time they technically turned on again, you were ready because you had those relationships in the back. It's just a matter of, it's not an if, it's a when. But when the tide turned again, how did you then build your team in Cebu while you're doing this?
Out of desperation, because I was burning out already.
Okay.
Like literally, I was working early morning in the cafe, checking the stores, and then working late at night. Mm-hmm. So my contractor who built all the cafes back then, I said, hey, I'm desperate. I need architects, because I was solo, right? Mm. He's like, oh, I have this guy, Ken, you should meet him. I'm like, sure, bring him over. I want to hire him like right now. I didn't even know. Like, I just needed a body, literally, who knew Ken.
Right.
So Ken, I think, you know, came into the office and he looked like, you know, it wasn't like formal. Like, he was wearing shorts and slippers. And I'm like, okay, you're hired. Like, you know, it's like... Like, you know, Ken, like, he did stars for Pen Shop because that was his thing. He was a drafter for Pen Shop and like right. the Pen Shop group.
Yeah.
So I hired Golden him on the ABC. Spot. We started working. And guess what? He's still with me 15 years later.
Amazing.
And
he leads the
retail team. So we've diversified. We now work with Jimmy Choo, Tory Burch, Aloe, a lot of brands. Like we're like a retail specialist. Right.
So
we do a lot of big retail companies. Now On Running, I don't know if you know On Running, the shoes.
Mm.
It's the one with the O's. People right, have right. those shoes
yeah. for
my clients now too. So people Looks know like a, MGS as a retail. Yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's it. I was so stressed because I was so tired. I was actually hiring is luck, right? Mm. It's so, I mean, I didn't judge the way he looked, that he wasn't wearing like a nice outfit. Like, you know what? I need help. I'm desperate. You come work with me. And then we've been together forever.
And that's amazing. I have a foundational piece also. She was my intern before and four companies after, she's still with me. Her name is Ivy Barnachea. She's now my co-founder, right? Same. I just really got lucky. She had the foundational pieces and I told her, you know what? Your superpower more than anything. Doesn't matter. There were times when I was a younger co-founder that, man, I had a temper. Still have a temper now, but I know how to be more even keeled. Right. But about this girl, the one thing that, regardless of how hard the day is, how shitty a day it was, I can count on her that tomorrow she will show up. And that superpower is such an indelible thing. So I want to now talk about your guy, that the guy in what's his name again?
Ted.
So
what's
his superpower that you saw? Because at the end of the day, there are things that are innate with these types of people. And then how did you also lead him to become a better version of himself together?
So what's his superpower? Mm-hmm. So, and this is a superpower of all of my employees. I'm very grateful. Anyone can draft, you know, you can pick a technical person, but Ken takes ownership of the company as if it's his own.
Mm.
Right. So even though he doesn't own it, I own it. It feels like he owns it, which is amazing. You know, when an employee takes ownership of the firm, then that's what makes it really a superpower.
Absolutely. Now, I want to understand now. So in architecture, is it apples to apples? Like the way it's done in the Philippines or in the US, is it different? How did you then adapt to the nuances and how did you train your team as you scale them up to adapt to the standards of how you do it in the US?
It's very different here in the Philippines. It's all concrete.
Yeah.
There, it's mostly steel and metal studs. But yeah, I thought that's why I lived here for 6 years to build the company before we moved back to Cleveland. So yeah, I trained them. You know, we do a lot. You know, have a lot of books. We do, and then our clients also give us reference sets. So Filipinos are very industrious and they like to figure things out and hardworking. So yeah, we figured things out with the help of our clients, right? So training and reading and researching and looking at references.
And
so that's how we do it.
The measurements are also different. I assume they're also using feet or instead of meters and centimeters.
It's just a learning curve.
Right.
We have to train our team. Like I think our interns go through 6 weeks of training before they can do live projects.
Mm.
Yeah, because there's a switch. We spend time and money on training because for me, quality is the most important. Quality and good customer service is how we stand out in the crowd.
All right. Now, again, you've set such a high bar, Aya, in terms of, hey, this is how we do it. But of course, you said it earlier, hiring is luck. But I believe also through so many attempts at hiring, hiring is pattern recognition. You can easily tell if someone has what it takes to thrive in a company that you've built in probably the first 5 to 10 minutes in any interview, because you've been through so many interviews. I would now want to understand first. So you have this foundational piece, borderline your co-founder, been with you since day zero, not even day one, right? How did you surround yourself with the team? Because you have this great training regimen, but you can't create that training regimen if you also didn't surround yourself with the foundational pieces that you also need to build in Cebu. What was that like?
So in the beginning, since we were very small, we only had one or two clients. It's all referrals. Mm. I only want to work with people who know people.
Got it.
Because they're my biggest advocates, right? Mm. So yeah, we started out with referrals. But now since the company has grown, I have a very intense marketing strategy for getting employees. Like if you see all of our reels, we're eating like bubble, what is it, boba, or we're eating pizza downstairs in Larshan. Yeah. I have a thing with we also have like our staff going in the jeepney, going to Larshan, or eating that quick. I don't know what that is, Do you know what I'm saying? Like people ask me, why do you show your employees doing all that? How are you going to get clients? I'm like, that's not for getting clients. That's for getting employees.
Correct.
Right. So that's my marketing strategy, because getting clients is, you know, it's people know me already. So people know the company, but what happens when you can't fill your pipeline of employees?
Correct.
That's why we have like, you know, Slow Ghost Night. We have design competitions for you. You know, last year we did a design competition for the students here in San Carlos. Right. And then we gave them a laptop, like, and an iPad.
That's amazing. Strategy.
Because now people want to work with us. A lot of architects will say, why will I work with MGS? They're an outsourcing company. I want to work for a real architecture firm. When they see videos of us having boba or dancing or going on boating trips with the banana boat,
right?
It's like, I want to work there,
right?
So that's a crucial part. A lot of firm owners don't really know that it's an employees market now. It's no longer an employer's game. Nope. Like you see a lot of employers lose talent and there's a high turnover rate. So in my opinion, like marketing to get good employees is crucial to keep the business running smoothly. So we have people now they're walking in and leave their resumes. Like some guys are like, I only want to work with MGS. When you have an opening, call me.
Wow. That's amazing.
Because for me, I can get clients. I can talk to people, but I always tell my team, do we have the pipeline to produce? Because quality is a non-negotiable. You need,
exactly.
I need quality. Yeah. That's why I don't know if you are social, but it's a lot of our memes and doing this.
No, should I just quit everything that I do and just join Aya now? Because I'll relocate too. You're doing such an amazing job.
On my team, we like to eat.
Yep. I mean, that's always a company culture that is irreplaceable. Stomach is the easiest path to someone's heart. That's the Filipino love language. The way we say, for all y'all Americans that are listening to this, the way we say, how are you, is have you eaten yet? That's how Filipinos do it, right? Or do you want to eat? There you go. Yeah. So I want to understand, Aya. So you have this pipeline now. You've established your company culture as something aspirational that, you know, it's a great place to work. But of course, since you have such a high standard, who makes the cut? How rigorous is that process, making the cut to come through and become part of MGS?
So I love that question, right? We have a lot of my friends in the US are like, you're so lucky. You have an amazing team. You're so lucky. You have good employees. No, I'm not lucky. There's a science to it. It's correct. Scientific, right? So I have a ratio of 150-50-5.
Okay.
I get 150 resumes. I interview 50 to narrow it down to 5.
Wow.
Right? That's the process. And then in terms of our interview process, before we used to interview them first, right? And then, you know, we like their talking skills, whatever, but I reversed it because it's a waste of time.
Right.
I don't want to talk to them. They have to do all of the skills tests, AutoCAD test, Revit test, because you can bullshit your way, right? You can talk, but if your results are not good, I don't want to waste my time talking to 50 people.
Exactly.
Right? So the stage gate is, you know, if they're applying for a Revit job, they have to get 80%, right? Or 70 or something. And then they go through the process. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've streamlined our hiring process to make sure that before they can even get to the next level, they have to pass a certain technical test.
Right. Those fundamentals are important because this is literally technical.
Yeah.
This is architecture. You can't just wing it by talking. There needs to be real skill.
And there are a lot of people who know how to talk because I did that before. I'm like, wow. And then all he did, he knew how to talk, but that's it. Right. So now I reversed it because we're always consistently filling our pipeline.
Right.
So you got to be smart about how to, and hiring is really a process and it's scientific.
Yeah.
Don't think employees will just automatically show up because you're going to pay them. No. After COVID, people realize they have options and now it's not about work anymore and money. Mm-hmm. It's called the great aspiration, not the great recession, the great aspiration. People value their time. Mm-hmm. They would rather make less and spend more time with their family, right?
Correct.
So something like that. So employers really need to learn how to market to find team members.
No, and that's true. And I totally agree. You said it, the tide has turned. It's not like you're the only company, and people are very, very particular now over the type of quality of life they want to have, considering what the pandemic taught us, that, hey, you can actually be as productive at home. I actually don't want to go back to the office right now. First of all, as an entrepreneur, after salaries, always the most expensive resource that you'll have to pay on your OPEX is always rent. I don't want to pay rent if we can be productive and I just need to pull up in the bed and I don't have to be... By the way, in the Philippines, traffic is crazy. So that hustle that I had just told about 5 hours going back and forth, that's our normal. Remember all that 5 hours that you can now give back to your employees being literally 2 minutes away from their families. That's a boon.
Right, right.
And also the corresponding expenses of you having to travel, gas, toll, whatever that is, right? That now you get to save. And that can be a boba tea for everybody in the family, that adds up. So I totally agree. Now, last question before we take our last break. As you scale, there's this thing from Rockefeller Habits. Again, shout out to Michael McCullough of KMC Solutions. The key learning there is the rule of 3 and 10. That every time your company multiplies in scales of 3s and 10s, shit breaks apart. Shit hits a fan and things just go become dysfunctional as well. So as you were scaling MGS, what were these new problems you now have to solve, but that's technically uncharted territory, and how did you solve them?
I don't think it's a problem, but for me, it is very uncomfortable because when we were scaling, I was just mom and pop, right? Now I hired a managing director and he told me I can't, we now had all these communication protocols that I cannot talk directly to the clients anymore.
Buffers.
There were buffers and I can't talk to the people anymore about project related or else I'll die of like exhaustion, right? So,
yes.
So that was like, because, and then I realized when we were scaling, I was like talking to clients, I was putting up fire, but for me, the most difficult was when I had to stop doing the things that I already knew how to do. I felt like I was detached from all of the things that I used to do. Mm. So for me, that was it, like adjusting to the new role of, and then obviously I hired, my managing director now who's COO, he's based in Atlanta. So that was the most difficult thing. Like we had no process and now we're all processed, right? There's no, you can't grow without a process. So that was the most difficult thing. And second, having difficult conversations because now we have the old gang and then the new batch.
Yeah.
Then, and then some people, the politics around
correct,
how to merge the new hires from the ones who've been with me for 9 to 10 years.
Right.
So how to navigate, people and
totally
having difficult conversations.
And that's a price of scale, right? Eventually there will be cohorts or batches of new people that are going to come. And you're right, that process of going from a 0 to 1 founder, some people never, for us, we're just hustlers. You just want to be able to go, I'll do it. I don't mind buying Merienda for everybody to date. It's all good, and whatnot. But
right.
Eventually, that's why I always say this in every episode, that founder and CEO are two different jobs. You will always be founders because that's the 0 to 1 journey. But as you scale your company, the price for success is you need to learn how to become a proper CEO. And that's creating lieutenants, systems, that will help you scale. And the painful part sometimes of becoming from a 0 to 1 founder is firing yourself on stuff that you love that now, unfortunately, you cannot do because it's for the betterment of the company that you just created.
That's great, because I was going to write an article. I fired myself as a drafter, right, and now my company grew.
Exactly. But yeah, it's the price of success sometimes that, you know, to the core, you cannot do that. That's why I really value what I do here in Hustle Share, at least, because I created the biggest podcast network in Southeast Asia, right? Easy.
Amazing.
But I still get to become, and still be 5 years on, a podcaster, right?
Yeah.
To the core, because that's how this started out, right? That I still get to talk to people like you who are super amazing, and we get to immortalize stories. So it still goes back to that 0 to 1. Even though I don't do a lot of the stuff that I used to do anymore, but it brings me back to that moment. Again, Aya, thank you so much for that. And we will now take our last break. And when we come back, we will now talk about how you then scale, what's up next. Of course, you have a podcast. And I want to zero in on one thing. Becoming a lady boss who, you know, in the field of entrepreneurship, there's not too many women. Let's talk about, you know, hustling as a woman and your tips for female entrepreneurs, not just here in the Philippines, but all across the world. But let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best.
With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay.
Rick, we are still with Aya Schlechter, then, who has the most Jewish name in Philippines.
Yeah, exactly, right?
There you go. But again, it's just such an amazing thing. So, Aya, obviously, you then did an amazing job scaling this up. But why did you decide to still go back? And why Cleveland? You're an East Coast girl. Why Cleveland all of a sudden in the chilly Midwest where winters can be very, very rough and punishing?
Yeah. Because when we decided to move back, my kids were older and we couldn't go back to New York City. It was too expensive to live there with two kids already.
Wait, did your kids know how to speak Cebuano?
They understand, but yeah, okay. They understand. But we moved back because we had two choices, either Cleveland, where my mother-in-law's from, or Arizona, where my father-in-law lives. They're separated, they're divorced. So we picked Cleveland because, you know, my mother-in-law is super close to the kids. And in retrospect, it's actually nice because it's not that expensive to live in the Midwest, Ron. Like, I mean, New York City and like San Francisco, the coast, they're so expensive.
Yep.
So I have a good family life there. It's affordable. And I'm centrally located to visit my clients all over the country.
Correct.
So it's easy for me to get to California, Vegas, New York from Cleveland. We're in the center. So
that's amazing.
I had a rough time from Cebu to Cleveland because Cebu is like happening. And then Cleveland, I didn't know anyone.
Well,
like,
Steve Harvey's from there, so you can always find it.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up in Cleveland.
Okay. Now, how did you then adjust to operating from overseas? Because obviously, you built the team, I don't know, a couple of years already, and you've created that flow that, all right, we're going to hustle, we're in the same time zone, blah, 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 blah. But now you're detached and I can already sense, Aya, you're also a control freak like me. You want to know everything that's going on.
I used to be.
Right? So you had to learn how to undo that. But how did you adapt your ability to still be a functional CEO and trusting the team to run on its own while they're in Cebu?
So before it was me and drafters, right? We had like 9 drafters and myself. But when I moved to the US, my friend who's one of my best friends, he's Filipino. He ran a company with 300 employees. Oh. He's like, Aya, you need to hire somebody like an office manager or like ops manager before you leave. And I'm like, no, because, you know, for me, I didn't have money to do that. I'm going to take care of it when I'm in the States. He's like, Aya, you have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. How are you going to manage? So he told me to look for somebody to do the office manager and operations. And then she was like very expensive, right? Like, okay. I'm not used to paying for a non-billable.
Mm.
And he's like, you need to hire that person or else you won't be able to sleep at night.
Exactly.
And you'll burn out. So I did that. So I found an office manager, operations manager to take care of the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was able to still manage. But yeah, I would wake up in the evening, you know, work with the team and do the morning shift. You know what it's like.
Yes, pod machine, similar thing. But we're all here in the same time zone, at least. It gets really weird when I'm in the US for a couple of weeks and they're like, what the hell? Just everybody's asleep.
Yeah. So I've been a remote CEO since 2014 when I moved. Mm-hmm. So when COVID hit, you know, I was already, you know, set up for remote work. So
that's
that was hard. Like hiring people that are non-billable was difficult for me. But now it's really crucial for people who just want to do things. You need to remove your different hats so you can grow. And that's what I did.
Got it. Now, what are those advices that you'd probably give? Being now, again, 10 years in the game, being a remote CEO, that's an eternity. What are these few hats and what are the first few moves that allowed you to become very, very prepared and even very productive in this setup?
I have a digital headquarters. So everything, you know, obviously you learn from your mistakes. When a client asks for work and your team, it's 3 a.m., right? Mm. Like, and they're all asleep. So now I made sure we have a digital headquarters. We use Slack. We have a communication portal. You know, we have our own portal for our clients, kind of like an Amazon. You put your work there and everything is centrally located. If I got sick or died today, the company will run. That's the way I set up the company. So again, systems and having a digital and redundancy, right? Some other people need to know where all the files are. So with technology, it's so easy. Before, it was just like I would call or chat with my staff in Facebook chat and went, you know, like very like bootstrapped, right? Mm-hmm. So now not anymore. I really make use of technology. I have different project management apps. Mm-hmm. Again, it's because I want to sleep at night.
Of course. We want to be able to enjoy life.
Just kidding.
Correct. Now, okay, I want to pivot now into entrepreneurship and being a woman entrepreneur. Of course, let's just call it what it is. There is a glass ceiling. Sheer numbers, at least in the startup industry here in the Philippines, there's just not as many female founders that we need to come in. If you look at the VC space, there's not too many women. Founder space, there's a few, but we're still dominated by men. And again, sometimes it's not our fault, the dude's fault, that there's a lot of us, but we need to empower more women entrepreneurs to become entrepreneurs, or people that women to become entrepreneurs themselves. But what will be your first advice if someone asks you for help now? Aya, say, hey, Aya, I want to be like you. How would you guide them, or what would be the first foundational steps? They're a woman. They're very ambitious, but they're operating in a world dominated by men.
For me, money is really important. You can't just quit everything and start your company. Like my husband gave me a $5 a day allowance, and I stuck to the budget, right? So you need to make sure you have your food, shelter, and clothing first, and like some savings.
Basics.
To be able to... Yeah. Basics. Are you live with your family? And also mindset is so important. I'm giving a lecture in Washington, D.C.
I love it.
In the AIA. It's the biggest conference for architects with 10,000 attendees. I'm giving a lecture on when to start your own firm, seizing the opportunity. Some people are cut out for it and some people are not, right? So it's really like you need a community, you need cash flow, you need to be mentally tough. You need to be resilient. You can't be like, give up right away. Like, dude, I almost became a sales lady 2 years ago. Like, what are the things you need to do to become successful, right? So it's really a lot of, and then plus being a woman in architecture, forget about it. No one takes you seriously, especially if you look young and like short like me, right? Like I started when I was 30, people didn't take me seriously. I was much skinnier and like cute, you know, little girl.
You're still cute, pretty, and everything else.
Will people take me seriously, right? So that's the thing. But you gotta, you know what? It's not about your gender, your race, your height, your size, but the quality of your work and your processes and your systems that can back you up, right?
Got it.
So what if I'm female, Filipina, short lady? You see what behind that company is your process, is your system, your people, the quality of your work. So if you can get past, you know, I'm still working on it. Like, I still feel like, oh God, I still need to prove. But yeah, I'm
the
past
imposter
that,
syndrome,
right?
Is always there.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. So just have, you know, be confident in the quality of the work that you're producing and you'll really do well. Because again, in the US, although there's some, you know, everywhere there's discrimination and like whatever, there's some people who really believe in you as a human being, not as a woman or as a man or whatever. Yeah. Because you provide good customer service and you have a good business model. Also, go into business knowing that you have a service or a product that can benefit other people. You know, don't just go into business for your ego. No, go into business because you want to serve a bigger community. Because when you have a good product, you don't have to ever sell.
Right.
People will find you.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's where reputation and hustling then kicks in, network effects, right? Now, again, last question before we talk about the future. of MGS, because I mean you've been at it already for a long time, but I'm pretty sure the best days are still ahead of you. But you also got into podcasting. So talk to me about that, and what is this new podcast you're launching?
So podcasting started during COVID. It's called the Architect My Life podcast, because I couldn't really do business development, right? Because that's so tacky. People are dying, and I didn't, and I was hanging out in my basement studio and looking at the female women groups. Everyone's is like so depressed because, you know, everyone's home, da da da. So
yeah.
My friend Jim Cirillo introduced me to this guy, Josh Ellich. He said, you know, you can actually up your influence and create a podcast. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So right now, nobody knows me. I only have like 4 clients or 5 clients who knew me. So this program kept me busy, like the up your influence, whatever, start the podcast. I didn't know what I was going to podcast about. So I decided to podcast about women in architecture and highlight all the women in architecture in the US. Mm-hmm. So that was the beginning. But little did I know that that became my pipeline, you know, like my funnel.
Yes.
Like I have like what, 6 followers, maybe my mom, my dad, my husband, whatever, like. But the company grew because my profile grew. So the podcasting was really my ticket to scaling. I did it myself. I did all of the things myself. Now I have a team. But, you know, I highlighted all the women. But then in the intro, obviously, I say I'm Aya Schlachter. I gave up my dream of becoming an architect to serve architects. And now this is my intro. Now I have no turning back. You know, why I love what I do is because I can provide, my clients can have more time to spend with their families, right? So that's the sell, right? Because drafting is so tedious, right? Yep. So now that people started knowing me and interviewing me, now I'm in the speaker circuit. Mm. And why would I buy from a random person in India or China? Mm. If an architect in the US wants to work with an outsourcing company, they need to work with someone who has US experience, who has a podcast, who knows people. So I've built the profile. Again, I didn't even know that this was going to happen.
Right.
So now I'm super grateful for podcasting. I got to connect with amazing women all over the world who also taught me how to scale. I mean, these people I interviewed are just such inspiration. And then it upped my profile. Now I'm getting leads because of this. But again, it's not traditional. I hate it when people say, how many followers do you have? Do you have sponsors? I'm like, no, it's not. It's a different kind of, you know.
No, it's strategy. Lead gen. That's it. That's the same thing that happened with me here in Hustle Share. I started out in 2019. Only the select friends that I knew in the industry. But oh my God, it went from here to interviewing Ernest Kui, interviewing you. It was my ticket to the rest of the world. And I did not see it coming.
And I'm so grateful that we met, because I've heard so much about you. And like the fact that we met in Florida, that was really amazing.
Right. Like, through a podcasting event.
Yeah, but to see, you know, everyone as a Filipino minority, I got introduced to you by no other than Chris Crimitsos. Like he and David, these are the major people in podcasting, and they look up to you. And for me, that's a win for the Filipinos, right?
Homegrown, baby. That's what it is. Yes. But again, such an amazing, amazing episode. Thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but we gotta hustle, even if it's recording this on Friday. But again, what's next for MGS? I know you're just literally scratching the surface. You've already gone a long way, but what's next for you guys? And if they want to reach out to you, where did they go and how did you do that?
What's next? I still really want to grow sustainably and make sure the quality of our work is good.
So follow really, the protocol. Don't go direct.
Yeah.
Now.
No, really. And you know, to serve more architects, because when we serve more architects, I can grow my team in the Philippines. When I grow my team, the more employees I can provide jobs for, right? It's just a cycle. So, you know, when people hire us, they have a better work-life balance. So that's really it. Grow sustainably, find really good clients, right? Like, you know, I really want to work with the people that I like, because, you know, we don't want to work with assholes or people who don't respect us, right? Just because we're in the, you know, Philippines or wherever we are in the world.
Yeah.
I'm launching a new podcast today. It's today I'm pivoting from Architect My Life to Architect My Business Growth for Architects. It's going to get launched in a few hours. And the reason for that launch is because a lot of people thought I was a life coach, and I got people like psychics and mediums asking me podcast. I'm like, I got to change this. So now we're launching the Architect My Business podcast, Business Growth for Architects. And then we have two mini shows under that. One is Her Space, Women in Architecture. And then Ask Aya. It's an 8-minute segment of people who just want to ask one question. Because, you know, attention is our greatest asset, but people don't have attention. So if they want to ask me one question, that's it. So we're launching today in like 6 hours.
There you go. So if you guys want to pick her brains, if you are super interested enough with Aya, she has a way to answer your questions and pay it forward to you. But before, Aya, again, thank you very much. But before I let you follow us on every podcast ever you listen to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and if we did say some jargon or any type of references that we discuss, it's going to be in the show notes on hustleshare.com. And again, thank you very much to all our premium supporters, Angelo Lee, all the brands that support this, Bo, and all that. You guys allow us to do great work and feature the great entrepreneurs like Aya into this. And if you want to support Hustle Share just like them, you can go to premium.hustleshare.com. Again, thank you so much, Aya.
Thanks. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I love it. Now, see you soon. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.